Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
Shame on the Miami Heat because they were beaten at their own game last night. It is Canty and Carlin in for Greeny on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Is there any cause for alarm for the Miami Heat? We'll get to that part of it in just a bit. We will get to plenty more. As soon as my partner has a microphone, we will do that here momentarily. Meanwhile, you know where we are going to start.
Here we go!
Only one place to start.
First time in NBA history, two players, same team with a triple-double.
I've been with Nikola for 8 and Jamal for 7 years. You know, we've had some pretty good moments, but not in the NBA Finals. By far, their greatest performance as a duo.
Hey, amazing performance by both Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. 30 and 30-point triple-doubles, 30-21. For Jokic and ten rebounds. I mean, it's absolutely, or 10 assists, rather. It's absolutely absurd what they did last night. But, Canty, it's not why they won. The Nuggets won that game by 15 last night because they did everything that the Miami Heat usually do. They beat them to loose balls. They out-rebound them. They crushed them on the boards. And let's just call it what it is. There was more effort and there was more toughness. And I never thought in the course of this series, I would be uttering that sentence when it came to the Miami Heat.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm not dismissing all of the facts that you just laid out there, but I thought the biggest factor in terms of the Nuggets being able to come out on top in Game 3 was getting Jamal Murray going early and often. Mm-hmm. And we were wondering what was going to be the response for Michael Malone, the wrinkle that he was going to use in order to free up Jamal Murray, because we noticed that Spo went with the all-big lineup to start Game 2 with Kevin Love and Bam Adebayo being in there, and that freed up Jimmy Butler to be the primary defender on Jamal. Well, last night we saw the counter from Michael Malone where he just featured dribble handoffs from Nikola Jokic to Jamal Murray. They had 15 total dribble handoffs between Jokic and Murray last night, and you're talking about 3 of the first 4 plays that the Denver Nuggets ran on their half-court possessions. Those were dribble handoffs, and Jamal Murray was featured in those situations. So I thought getting him going early, letting him be aggressive, scoring the basketball early on in that game, helped in terms of being able to, you know, be able to get some momentum, but then also freeing up Nikola Jokic to do what he does best, which is distribute the basketball and be a playmaker.
But, you know, on the flip side, it does have to be disappointing. I mean, I hear this from Jimmy Butler after the game, and I think you can hear his disappointment, not in the result, but in how it went down and what he had to say.
You mentioned the effort. Why do you think it was so lacking tonight?
I don't know. I can't answer that. Maybe, you know, we're at home. We think we did something. I don't know. It just can't happen. It won't happen again. It starts with myself. You know, I got to lock in on a defensive end. I got to go up and get loose balls. So I think if I start playing and doing that, then everybody else has to follow suit.
I thought it was interesting that he said in there, maybe we thought we did something. When do you think of the Miami Heat ever thinking that they did something or getting full of themselves in the moment? Like, I didn't necessarily think that's what happened. I just didn't think their energy level was great. And the Nuggets came out and had a great energy level and did all of those things to win the game. Yep. And, Chris, the reason the Miami Heat are here is because of effort, because of the loose balls, because of rebounding, all those things that you have to do. I did it again with my cup. It's amazing. I can't stop knocking this cup over. It's unbelievable. But listen, if that was a loose ball, the Denver Nuggets would have gone and grabbed it immediately. To me, that's why if you're the Heat, this is the only way that you have a chance to win this series.
Well, you have to muck it up, right? Because, yeah, you know there's a disparity when it comes to talent. If you're the Miami Heat, you realize the Denver Nuggets just have more. They just do. They have more. They've got 3 lottery picks in their starting lineup. And so when you recognize that this team has the ability, from a talent standpoint, to beat you on any given night, you got to do all of the little things. You got to win within the margins. And I thought that the Denver Nuggets did a good job of recognizing that formula for success for Miami, what they saw in Game 2, and flipping that on its head and doing the same thing back to the Heat in Game 3 in their building. And so you have to credit Michael Malone in that, because he challenged his team in the post-game press conference when he talked to the media, and he challenged them in the locker room following their game two loss in Denver. And those guys came out and responded. And I thought they were much more locked in defensively, even though the role players didn't get a ton of touches, didn't have a lot of, you know, open shots. What they did do is lock in defensively. And you saw that connectivity from the Denver Nuggets on the defensive end. And one of the guys that I want to point out, Michael Porter Jr. When he was in defensive coverage on Jimmy Butler, he did a phenomenal job. And I think you got to credit guys for making all of those little plays, making the hustle plays. And Michael Porter Jr. did that. Christian Braun gave him great minutes off the bench. You're talking about a guy that had 15 points in 19 minutes off the bench.
Amazing.
Like, that's what you needed. I mean, Bruce Brown didn't get it going. Jeff Green didn't get it going. You know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope didn't get it going. But Christian Braun stepped in and gave him that energy, that spark plug, that scoring off of the bench. But again, that's the value, or that's the beauty of what the Denver Nuggets do. That's the beauty of their depth and how they've constructed this roster. It can be any of those role players on any given night. They don't need them all to get going on the same night, but they just need one of those guys to step up alongside Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic playing like they did yesterday.
Canty and Carlin in for Greeny on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. So Michael Malone, with those adjustments and with that motivation between games, we see was able to make a huge difference. Here's Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider on SVP last night, with some details on exactly how he did it.
You know, you saw Michael Malone jump his team after game two, and it was kind of questionable. Why would you do that publicly? And it's because they don't have a bad guy in this locker room. They don't have a bad cop. They don't have a Draymond Green. They don't have a Jimmy Butler. He had to be the bad cop, and he knew how to play it. And so you may have heard that he showed his team 17 clips yesterday of the ways that they screwed up on defense in game two. Why were there 17? Because every single player got a single clip, and he had to announce to the group where they screwed up. That means some player had to announce, Jokic, you screwed up. Some player had to announce, Murray, you screwed up, even if it was a bench guy. Miami had been awesome in game threes in this postseason. Obviously, all their game threes have been at home, and they won by an average of 22 points. They've killed teams here in game three. But Denver came out totally ready, way better on defense, and they obviously wanted to make sure Jamal Murray got going after not being so good. Michael Malone, gold star performance, getting his team to win this game.
To Wendy's point about the leadership dynamic with the Denver Nuggets, like, Michael Malone understands his locker room, he understands his personnel, and if you don't have those rah-rah guys, if you don't have those vocal leaders as a head coach, you got to step in and you got to be that. But in order to know what buttons to push, you got to know your guys. And the one thing that Michael Malone said last night that really caught me off guard, big fella, and it was really a tongue-in-cheek comment. It was in passing. It wasn't the point of the commentary that when he was asked a question. But he mentioned that he was with Nikola Jokic for 8 years, that he was with Jamal Murray for 7 years. And it got me to thinking, have we seen a tandem with their head coach be around as long as these three have been in Denver? I mean, think about it. These three have been together for 7 years in Denver. I mean, in the NBA, it feels like those are dog years. Think about how long of a time that is. Think about how this league is constantly turning over every single summer. To think that these guys have been together 7 years, it's incredible, but it also speaks to the chemistry that we're seeing on the court and why it feels like this Nuggets team is able to figure out answers to everything that Eric Spoelstra and the Miami Heat are throwing at him. And so I think there's an argument to be made when it comes to program development with continuity. And you're starting to see that play itself out with what we're seeing in the NBA Finals and what we've seen so far from the Nuggets this postseason.
I mean, who's the only other group like that in recent memory you could talk about? It's Golden State.
That's it.
There's nobody else. Oh, and by the way, Golden State's won 4 championships.
But that's my point.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my point. So, these are guys that the Denver Nuggets have drafted.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's something to be said for being able to stay the course and trusting that the head coach with your two superstars, if their character and their acumen is such, they're going to have an opportunity to compete and win championships. And it feels like the Denver Nuggets are on the verge of that.
Now, I didn't mean to downplay the incredible performance by Murray and Jokic last night, because when you think about this, it is a remarkable, remarkable stat. Last night is the first game in NBA history, not finals history, not postseason history, all of NBA history, to have two guys record 30-point triple-doubles mm-hmm. on the same team. That is absolutely absolutely amazing. And you're right. The getting Murray involved early was very important. And just establishing right away, I just love the way Jokic plays so much in that he has such a great feel for what needs to be done on the floor and who needs to be involved and where. And just to go back to your Porter point too, Porter wasn't even shooting it well, but he was there defensively.
Oh, no doubt about it. And that's what you have to have if you're going to win a championship.
And that's who Malone was talking to the other night.
Well, he was talking to everybody not named Jamal Murray or Nikola Jokic.
Right.
That's exactly who he was talking to. Everybody not named those two guys because the other players didn't bring the effort. But that's what it's going to take in order to beat the Miami Heat. And that's a credit to the Heat culture, right? You have to play your A game in order to beat Miami. They're not going to beat themselves. It's like Bill Belichick talks about all the time in the NFL. And before you win a game, you have to avoid losing the game. The Miami Heat usually avoid losing the game. But last night, based on the pressure that the Denver Nuggets were able to establish from the opening tip, they did things that were uncharacteristic. They got hammered on the boards. They lost a rebounding battle 33-58. Think about that. 58? They were the Denver Nuggets were plus 25 in rebounding? The Denver Nuggets had 60 points in the paint to compare to the Miami Heat's 34 points in the paint? Think about it. We're not used to seeing those things. We're just not. And so that's the surprise for me is the fact that Denver was able to out-hustle Miami when that is the calling card for Eric Spoelstra's team. And everybody post-game for the Heat, credit to them, had that level of awareness where they said, you know what? We got out-hustled. They gave more effort. And those aren't things that X's and O's can fix. Jimmy Butler said it. Eric Spoelstra said it. So I expect that we're going to see the very best version of this Miami Heat team in game four because now all of a sudden that becomes a must win. Otherwise, we're talking about this thing getting wrapped up on Sunday in Denver.
Canty and Carlin in for Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. If you're looking for a career path with flexibility, great pay, and benefits, go to progressive.com/careers. Apply online today. And up next, we talk to a current NBA player who believes this duo of Jokic and Murray is the best in the league right now. CJ McCollum joins us here in person in just moments. It is Canty and Carlin in for Greeny on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Greeny, the podcast. The NBA playoffs.
There's the triple-double for Jamal Murray. Got the rebound with 5 seconds to go. First time in NBA history. Two players, same team with a triple-double.
I just thought we were disciplined all game. You know, even when we made mistakes, we were quick to correct them and quick to move on to the next play. And that's what we need for the rest of the series.
Continuing coverage of the NBA playoffs on Greeny with Mike Greenberg.
Canty and Carlin in for Greeny on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. We are thrilled to welcome in CJ McCollum, ESPN NBA analyst, Pelicans guard. He joins us right now here in studio. Thanks for coming by. We appreciate it, PJ. I know you're doing a lot of TV these days. Great to see you.
No problem. Thanks for having me, man. It's a
pleasure. Well, let's get into last night. What were your biggest takeaways from last night's Game 3?
I think my biggest takeaways were the fact that I felt like Denver's level of intensity increased, definitely, and I feel like they had a sense of urgency that they didn't possess in Game 2. They understood what was at stake. You can't lose a game at home, then go on the road and lose two games in a row and go down. Understand that you're going to be in Miami. I thought Joker was great, as always, but I thought Jamal Murray was really assertive in his approach. The first quarter, he got a lot of shots up, got to the basket, ended up shooting 7 free throws, and I thought that his ability to control the game and the pace was ultimately the difference, and then they got some help from the rookie who put up 15 points on 7 of 8 shooting.
So what do you expect to be the counter to what we saw Michael Malone feature on the offensive end with Joker and Jamal Murray running so many DHOs in Game 3? What's the counter for that in Game 4 if you're the Miami Heat beyond just effort?
Yeah, I think you got to mix up coverages. I think they got too used to the fact that Miami was just chasing over or late switching or late, we'll call it late reds, whatever the case may be. You have to change your coverages up on elite players. You can't do the same thing over and over again. Look for them to do some traps. Look for them to do some switching. Look for them to do some switching into double teams. And then they should also run a little bit more zone. I think they'll sprinkle in some 2-2-1, some 1-2-2 where it's like a rotating matchup zone, because Joker's too good to guard in the same way, and he's probably going to get 30 anyway, right? He's averaging over 30, 14-9. On 60% shooting, which is ridiculous. Yeah. He leads the NBA in total points, total assists, total rebounds. He's going to literally shatter every record. He's breaking records that Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had. So that shows you the greatness in which he possesses. So you don't worry about him. He's going to get his. Nothing to do about it. You have to contain Jamal Murray and make it as difficult as possible. And I thought last night he was way, way too comfortable. And I thought Jimmy said one thing about them playing soft and not really getting into him, and I think that's on him. Take the challenge defensively to try to guard him.
CJ McCollum, Pelicans guard, of course, ESPN NBA analyst joining us. It's Canty and Carlin in for Greeny on ESPN Radio. So with that in mind, when you see the Heat play the way they do consistently, to me it felt like the Nuggets kind of outheated the Heat last night because of effort level. Just how shocking was it to kind of see that the Heat were not as energetic as maybe normally they are?
Yeah, I was definitely surprised. I think historically you associate the Heat with playing hard, having a great culture, obviously, but competing every night and making the other team raise their level of play. And I thought tonight the Denver exceeded their level of play, and the Heat kind of had a lull. This is the first time throughout the playoffs where we're talking about them not getting loose balls, not getting rebounds. They were out-rebounded by over 25, and I think Pat Riley's saying is no rebounds, no rings. So you can't give up second-chance opportunities. You can't give up the little stuff and miss your open three-pointers. I think they did all those things tonight. And going into Game 4, they understand this is a must-win. I don't use the term must-win very often, but you can't go down 3-1 to a team that has a two-time MVP who's unstoppable.
CJ, the concept of not giving effort seems hard to grasp when we're talking about the NBA Finals for regular fans out there. Right. You heard it in Game 2. Michael Malone's rallying cry for his team was, we got to give more effort. This is the NBA Finals. We can't be talking about effort. Eric Spoelstra, the same thing last night. Why are we seeing such inconsistencies when it comes to the effort that both of these teams are bringing to the table game in, game out?
I think it's twofold. And it's not to make excuses, but this is an extremely long season where the Nuggets had 9 days in between games. So, of course, there's going to be a lull here or there, because when do you have a break that long? All-Star break's not even 9 days. So to have that in the middle of a playoffs going into the finals is absurd to see, right? And then you look at the fact that Miami was the underdog this entire way, right? They lose the playing game at home to the Atlanta Hawks. They get embarrassed at home. And then they go on a run where they essentially make a run to the finals without their third leading scorer, Tyler Hero, who averages 20 points per game. So Miami's been the underdog throughout this entire series. And Denver, who was favored by 8 in Game 1, favored by 8 in Game 2, after losing at home, they were favored 2.5 on the road, and now are favored by 3 points, I believe, in Game 4. Like, they're supposed to win. So it's easy to get content at times and to kind of relax when you know deep down you have in the spades deck, you know, you got the big Joker.
You got the big Joker.
You can relax.
Yeah. CJ McCollum with us, ESPN NBA analyst and Pelicans guard. It is, you mentioned like the spreads and stuff. It is weird the way the betting is going, that everybody have just kind of written off the Heat. Perfect example, before the game yesterday, the Nuggets are minus 280 to win the series, almost 3-1. Now they're 8-1 to win the series. They are likely to win the series. Why is it that we keep writing off the Miami Heat collectively as a society?
I think it's twofold. I think, one, they're missing their third leading scorer, which is something that's not being talked about enough. That's 20 points per game that they're missing right now. And they're depending on role players, undrafted players to carry the load. Jimmy's had to do a lot up to this point. He's had to carry them from round to round with an ankle injury. And he's going on to say it like out loud. He's not a scorer, right? He's a basketball player that does things the right way. So I think people are picking Denver because they're the better team. They were number one all year in the Western Conference. They have a guy who's unstoppable, who averages a 30-point triple-double. And now their 1B, their second-best player, had a 30-point triple-double and is becoming virtually unstoppable again, similar to how he was in the series against the Lakers. So, I mean, you just look at it. You look at the game objectively and you say, this is the home team. They have home court advantage. They were the best team throughout the NBA in the regular season. And they have the best player in the series. I think they're going to win.
Yeah. Well, we referenced Tyler Hero, though, at the beginning there. What are the implications here of playing him versus not playing him in the rest of the series?
I think it's twofold. Comfortability level on the injury, right? I heard he's still having some pain and some uncomfort, some discomfort when he's shooting the ball, dribbling the ball, catching the ball, things of that nature. And as a guy who – I got surgery on my UCL 6 weeks ago. Like, your hand is extremely important in all sports, but especially basketball. So I think there's the comfort level, and then it's the rhythm thing. The Heat are playing great without him. One of the things he talked about was not wanting to disturb the rhythm of the team and kind of mess up what they've been able to establish and build with his absence. So I think that's something they have to collectively talk about, his comfort level and this team and the organization's comfort level on inserting him back into the lineup, whether that's off the bench, in the rotation, or whatever the case may be. But they're lacking scoring. As we've seen last game, they're lacking shooting because it's been very inconsistent from game to game.
CJ, the other big news yesterday in the NBA, away from the NBA Finals, was the Phoenix Suns making it known that they're going to waive Chris Paul. Now, the early favorites to land Chris Paul, the Los Angeles Lakers, the LA Clippers, or potentially going back to Phoenix on a lesser deal. What situation makes the most sense if it's all about competing for a championship for CP3?
If it's about competing for a championship, then I think you probably stay. Looking at what they were able to accomplish last season with injuries, right? They had a lot of injuries throughout the year. KD gets traded. He gets hurt right away after they get off to a great start. I think they were 6-0, 7-0. He goes down and essentially misses the rest of the regular season. Didn't have a training camp. Couldn't really practice because he was injured. And then they limped into the playoffs. Were playing well in the playoffs. And then CP goes down, right? Isn't able to play throughout the rest of the playoffs. Then Ayton goes down and gets hurt. Doesn't play in the last game. I think all those things impacted what we were able to truly see from that group. And then obviously Monty ends up being let go. But I think his best chance, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant in Phoenix, he understands the organization. He understands the system. Obviously they're bringing in a new coach, but he can adjust. I would say there is probably ideal if they can figure out the financials and what that looks like for all parties. And then outside of that, both LA teams are really good and they both have point guards who are free agents. So, and he's a Los Angeles person who loves to be in Los
Angeles.
Yeah,
family lives in Southern California.
So that's the easy answer.
He's CJ McCollum. He is joining us right now of the Pelicans. If you are the Lakers, can you afford to do it just given injury history and what you're dealing with injury history of Anthony Davis and the age of LeBron at this point? Are you putting too many eggs in that basket?
Depending on how you would plan to use him, I think you can absolutely do it. Looking at their roster right now, Austin Reeves, they have to figure out, you know, restricted free agent. D'Angelo Russell, they have to figure that out. Dennis Schroeder. So they have a lot of guards. They're going to figure out who they're going to keep and who they're not going to be able to pay. And then Chris Paul, if he ends up leaving Phoenix, I think that means that his deal has shifted and the type of deal that he's going to be given on the open market may have shifted to where it could be absolutely worth it. And you're not signing Chris Paul for the regular season.
Yeah.
You're signing him for the playoffs. A guy who can make the right decisions, hit big shots down the stretch of games, orchestrate, run an offense, brings you that leadership, and then that experience of having played in so many different environments, so many different situations. You need those types of players with experience, especially in the playoffs. You've seen Jeff Green, right? Him having conversations with Aaron Gordon in the playoff game last night about how to defend certain ball screens, how to defend certain off-ball actions. And I think that veteran leadership is something that you can't really put a price on. And then you add that to the fact that he averages 14-9. Like, that's a guy who's very serviceable and can still win games for you.
Talking to all-star guard for the Pelicans and MBPA president CJ McCollum on Greeny. And CJ, we can't let you get out of here without asking you about your former teammate in Portland. It feels like every summer we're having this conversation.
Yeah.
But if, in fact, this ends up being the offseason where Dame gets traded, what makes this the right time for Dame to leave Portland?
Yeah, I start with saying he wants to be in Portland and Portland wants to keep him, but they're still trying to figure out how to build a contending team and to give them a chance to compete for playoffs and a potential ring.
They've been trying for a long time, dog.
Man, I was a part of it, so yeah. I understand. And I think in the event that things don't work out and they're not able to get the pieces that they feel are necessary to push forward, then obviously they'd have a conversation. I think in terms of timeline, you look at age, right? You look at career. You know, just finished his 11th season in the NBA, probably a 7-time All-Star, multi-time All-NBA guy, Hall of Famer, top 75, greatest players of all time. He's getting to that point in his career where he realizes, and we all realize that after 30, you're closer to the end than the beginning. And you want to compete for a title, but you also care about happiness. You also care about your family. You also care about comfort. So I think all those things go into play. But I think from the organization standpoint, they got to figure out, what are we doing? Are we trying to rebuild? Do we want to press the rebuild button and the restart? Or do we want to try to continue to build alongside our franchise, who's, you know, arguably the greatest player of all time? So in terms of timing, I think it's just a matter of age, where we're at in our careers, and the fact that a championship is priority now for him because he's already made more money than he can ever spend.
Well, here's what's interesting about it, though. We see so many stars in the NBA not be as patient with a particular situation as he has been in mm-hmm. Portland. So what is it that has kind of, from just observing it, that has fostered that relationship with wanting to do it there?
Yeah, I think it's the love. It's the love there, man. I played there for 9.5 years. They love you. They support you. They support the things that you do. And if you, and it's like a plant, you water it, it's going to grow. And I think he's nurtured that environment. He's nurtured that organization and the fans. And they're all appreciative of, obviously, his greatness, but the fact that he's remained, as they say, loyal to the soil. He stayed there for a long time. There's chances for him to leave. There's been opportunities for him to leave. Stephen A. talks about him needing to leave every day. I think everybody's banging on the table. Like, you know, you say you want to win a championship. Why aren't you trying to leave? And I think for him, it's about the comfort. It's about the fact that he wants to win a ring in Portland, which is what he's said on the record many, many times. So I think that's some of the reasons why he wants to stay. And I think him being a California, you know, native, it's close to California. It's an easy flight to go from Oregon to California.
CJ, I'm sorry I lied to you about that being my last question because I got another one. Adam Silver was on with the NBA Countdown crew yesterday and floated the idea of during the All-Star break setting up an All-Star game where you have international-born players versus American-born players. What do you make of that idea? Is that something that you think that the NBPA can get behind in terms of supporting the All-Star festivities?
I would need to know more details as to how the roster is constructed, but I think as it stands now, it would limit the pool of American players that can make it, because if it's 12 versus 12, then you have to find 12 international players. And I don't think 12 international players made the All-Star game last year. I think there was a lot, but it wasn't 12. So I think that's something you have to factor in when having that discussion and conversation. But as I've said before, you know, that's a conversation the players got to have, and whatever the players feel is best is what I'll vote on behalf of. And if it's going to help make our game better, then we have to consider whatever options are going to make our game better.
CJ, great stuff, man. We appreciate
awesome stuff, hanging with us.
And listen, best of luck, and, you know, keep developing, firing off those hot takes. It's like a jump shot.
Oh, he's that guy? I mean, he is going to be an absolute superstar.
No question.
Once he decides he's going to step away from being a superstar in the NBA.
He's a Patriot League dude. What do you expect? Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate y'all.
That's CJ McCollum, ESPN NBA analyst. All-Star guard for the Pelicans as well. It's just the way they put it up on the
screen.
Is there
anything that he can't do?
Well, I forgot to mention the CJ McCollum show, wherever you get your podcasts as well.
There it is.
Bad job by me.
Greeny, the podcast.
Four-time Pro Bowler is on the market, Canty and Carlin. And for Greeny, presented by Progressive Insurance, Progressive can help you protect your home, auto, boat, motorcycle, ATV, RV, and more. And if something wasn't mentioned that you had in mind, well, find out if it can be covered at progressive.com at 1-800 or at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Because it probably can be.
Hey, before we get to the topic at hand here, are you aware of what you said during the McCollum interview?
Yeah, you called him PJ.
I did not.
Yeah.
Let's give it a listen.
We are thrilled to welcome in C.J. McCollum, ESPN NBA analyst, Pelicans guard. He joins us right now here in studio. Thanks for coming by. We appreciate it, P.J. I know you're doing a lot of things these days.
Yes! It's
C.J.'s evil twin brother, P.J.
Oh,
PJ.
My God.
P.J.
P.J. McCollum.
I mean, but you literally, 15 seconds before that, called him CJ.
Well, that's the best part about
literally,
it.
Literally. You got it right, and then you got it wrong.
To his face, called him PJ.
Well, I
think that's... listen, he's 2 for 2, right? The first segment, he knocks over his thermos. Second segment, disrespects our guest by calling him PJ and not CJ.
It was obviously
what the hell is he going to do this segment,
Canty, Bubba? Canty, you got to watch out. That water bottle is going to get spilled on you.
I'm telling you. I mean, as if I hadn't gotten hit in the head enough.
I'm sure.
I'm telling you, man. You're going to get CTE. It's an occupational hazard working with Carlin.
Well, based on that, I'm the one with the CTE. If I'm going to call him PJ 10 seconds after calling him CJ.
No, I'm just saying, if I get hit with that thermos, you see how big that thing is?
It is big.
It's the size of your head.
I'll tell you what it is, too. Solid.
It's solid?
It's, feel that thing. Go ahead.
No, I'm good. I'm just saying. Anytime a guy asks you, anytime a guy asks you to do that,
you know what? This is.
I don't think I can get on board with that. Cam, Bubba, am I wrong? Anytime a guy asks you that question, just not going to get on board with doing it.
I think you're right to avoid that. I also don't think that the water bottle is as big as Carlin's head. I don't know if that's possible.
Well, you don't know if it's possible?
Nothing is possible.
I wonder, if you did play football, what size helmet would you wear?
I don't know, how do they size helmets? I know, I told you, I wear a size 8 1/4 hat.
Well, whatever helmet that you would wear, it would have to be a custom job. I don't think they sell.
I'd have one helmet. Of those giant gazoo helmets.
Yeah, with a helmet that it looks like it has a helmet on top of the helmet.
Like Mark Kelso from the Bills used to wear that thing back in the day. Yeah. It looked like the Great Gazoo.
Yeah. I think you would have to have something like that.
Yeah, not good. Appreciate it, PJ.
Oh, that's you with Freddie's fedora on?
Yeah. Man. Freddie's like, go ahead, put it on. I'm like, Freddie, I'm not going to ruin your hat. And he's like, I got a bunch of them. Don't worry.
Yeah, we know he threw that away a second he walked out of the studio.
A lot of sweat on that, too. That's the other thing.
I mean, if you had some sunglasses, maybe you look like a plus-size blues brother.
There are not many people. First of all, John Goodman did that already, and it didn't work. It didn't work. Blues Brothers 2000. Secondly, if there are not many people who can pull off the hat look.
Yeah.
Did you wear a hat at your wedding or no? Like post-wedding?
No.
At the reception? I don't know why thought maybe you did.
No hat.
Okay.
No hat.
Yeah. There are not many people who could pull it. Freddie could pull it off. Freddie, it works.
It works with Freddie. He's the OG.
Yeah, exactly. But
you got to have the swag. It's not just about how you look. It's just about your swag and how you carry yourself. I feel like certain guys can do it and other guys can't. It has nothing to do with what you actually look like, but a lot of it has to do with your swag.
It has to do with calling people by their right name.
Appreciate it, PJ. Wow.
Bubba just felt the need to interject that.
He's just twisting the knife.
He really is.
Not to let you forget.
Yeah, it's sticking the knife in and twisting it. That's
appreciate
exactly.
it, PJ. You called him CJ, then you turned around and called him PJ.
That's amazing.
He's a good sport, though. He took it in stride.
I
noticed as soon as you did it, and I think he did, too. He looked at me. I was like, yeah, but... He just kind of went along with it and answered the question.
Did I call him PJ any other time?
No, I was listening for it after that. I heard only CJ's.
That's because I knew it was CJ. I don't know how I did it. I don't know how
now
I did it.
Now when we have Coach Carlissimo on, you're going to call him CJ.
CJ Carlissimo.
Canty and Carlin, ESPN Radio, and on the ESPN app in for Greeny today. Adam Schefter tweeted just a little while ago that the Vikings are expected to try to trade Dalvin Cook one more time today. And if they are unable to, they would then process his release tomorrow. The teams that come up immediately, according to Schefter, the Miami Dolphins, who they've been rumored on that all offseason, as well as the Denver Broncos. I'm over here looking for other teams where there are fits. I'm sorry, I'm I don't know why you would have the Cowboys as a definitive out. I think that would be a great fit for the Cowboys.
Well, Clarence Hill, who does a great job of covering the Cowboys for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, said that they're not necessarily going to be knocking down Dalvin Cook's door if and when he becomes available. And we know how the Cowboys feel about, you know, being able to draft and develop their own players. We'll see where their running back depth chart goes, because it does feel like it's a little thin. They've got Tony Pollard, Malik Davis, and not a lot of other proven talent beyond that. Now, we do know they're high on Deuce Vaughn, a draft pick, and his dad, Chris, works in their front office. But, yeah, they seem like they would be a good fit for Dalvin Cook. But I think about what the Cowboys need. They have that slasher type of running back. They really need more of that thumper type of running back, a guy that can get those tough yards, 3 and 4 yard gains in between the tackles. They don't have that element now that Ezekiel Elliott is off the team. So it'll be interesting to see what direction they go if they decide they're going to get veteran running back help. But to Miami, I mean, Dalvin Cook in that skill position core with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and Cedric Wilson, I mean, you're talking about a 4x1 relay team. It's unbelievable the glut of speed that Dolphins offense would have. I mean, you could make the argument that that's the fastest offense in the National Football League, point blank period.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. Yeah, absolutely. That would be the first. That would be the fastest. But think about this, too, from the Viking standpoint. So now Cook, Eric Kendricks, Adam Thielen, they let go. Danielle Hunter, the pass rusher, probably going to be on the market, too.
Yep.
It's not a full-on tank, but it doesn't feel great across the board, does it? Because we know that they have to figure out life beyond Kirk Cousins pretty soon.
Yes. Well, here's the thing. I don't – Justin Jefferson is pretty damn good. He's pretty damn good. And they added another really good receiver, Jordan Addison, in the first round.
Yeah.
So he's got pass catchers that he can go to. Remember, they did make the trade for the tight end Hockenson, too.
Last year.
And you saw how big of a factor that guy was once he came over in the second half of the season. So Kirk Cousins has got weapons to distribute the football to. And they love Alexander Mattison, too. So I think this is a situation where the Minnesota Vikings are comfortable moving off of Dalvin Cook just because of the talent that they have on that offense, but it's just a matter of, can that offense overcome a suspect defense that doesn't have a whole lot of leadership?
Remember, well, that's the thing with Hunter.
No Za'Darius Smith. Yep. You're talking about no Hunter, potentially. Eric Kendricks is gone. He's now playing in L.A. with the Chargers. So you don't really have a ton of leadership other than Harrison Smith on the back end. So that would be the interesting thing to see what identity that team takes on. But it's clear that offense is going to have to win the day in Minnesota. And I guess you wouldn't have it any other way because you have an offensive-minded head coach.
You know, the only other place I thought of for Dalvin Cook was maybe the Bears. But we know that he's a Miami guy. It's just, what kind of money is Dalvin Cook going to get? You don't think it's going to be big money anywhere. I don't think it'll be league minimum. But he's not going to get a big contract.
But if you're not going to cash in and get the bag, what's the next best thing? Competing for a championship.
Go to where you can win. Yeah.
And so when you start looking at those teams, you realize that it's probably a short list. Miami would have to be near the top.
Appreciate it, PJ.
Thanks for listening to Greeny the Podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN, and also available wherever you get your podcasts.